with Sophie Black.
Hello, welcome back. My guest this week is the much anticipated Alice Lowe, who we've mentioned a few times on the podcast by being a kind of super mum. I actually hate that word because we're all super mums and dads, aren't we, really? But yes, she wrote and shot a feature film while she was pregnant called Prevenge, comedy slasher movie, which we talk about quite a bit. It's all about a woman whose unborn fetus is sort of pushing her to take revenge for the death of her partner, which is really funny and brilliant cast, and I very much recommend it if you haven't seen it already. She's of course done lots of things other than that. She appeared in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place and loads of comedies like The Mighty Boosh, and most recently Hang Ups and Bandersnatch Black Mirror, which we'll talk about in a second. One thing I thought I needed to explain at the outset, quite near the beginning, we talk about someone called Dan Skinner being a lover of auditions. He is better known as Angelos Epithemiou, who's in Shooting Stars, and he does a lot of things. He's also in, what was that great sitcom with Katherine Parkinson? The Kennedys. He was the dad in that. So yeah, we are talking about someone we both know. And I just wanted to explain who that was, so you had some mental image. Anyway, Alice came in. We chatted for a very long time. It was very difficult to edit because we literally did not stop talking, and then went for coffee afterwards and carried on talking because she is a very brilliantly interesting and funny and wonderful woman. But we started off talking about Bandersnatch Black Mirror, which she appeared in recently, which if you haven't already seen, is a show on Netflix. It's, well, Black Mirror, obviously Charlie Brooker series, but this particular episode is a kind of choose your own adventure style show, in the sense that you get to an end of the scene and you get a choice between, you know, what you want the character to do next, which is really exciting, but messed with some people's heads. Because obviously death of the narrator, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so it's I think it sort of ruffled some very few feathers, but that's what we started talking about. And Alice explained how many of the issues people had with it just enhanced the basic idea.
The criticism is inherent to the plot. Any criticism that you have of Black Mirror, they are addressing within the show. That's what's so clever about it. It's kind of going, it doesn't work. It is an illusion. Yeah. It is going to be negative, whatever happens. There's going to be dire consequences. If you've got power over someone's life, they're going to go mad and they're going to kill themselves, you know. And you sort of go, well, that's, the morality is inherent within the tale. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So if you don't get that, then...
then that's,
Because my dad was like, I spoke to my dad today. He was like, he's hilarious. He was... you know, they're really proud of me, but they will see the worst in what I've, you know, like, they'll go, oh, well, Daily Mail gave Sightseers one star. And I'll be like, why have you chosen that? Of everything that you could, like, talk to me about. So today he goes, well, Bandersnatch Black Mirror has had a lot of criticism, hasn't it? That's his first thing. And I'm like, who from? Like, Daily Mail readers or the rest of the world? What are you talking about? And he was like, oh, well, people thinking it might be driving people to suicide or making people choose it.
Is that what the Daily Mail says?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just like, well, what? I haven't heard any of this. I've just, you know, had people on Twitter say stuff about it, which has all been really positive, obviously. Like the particular age group, whatever. So I was just like, what?
Is it like a parent thing? My mum used to always, like, she was so determined not to sound like a smug parent that she would massively overcompensate. So she, I once got a job at the BBC, and the person who gave me the job saw my mum, because my mum also worked at the BBC, in a corridor and said, oh, I've just given your daughter a job. And my mum went, oh, she's really flaky. Like, to this woman who just gave me a job. You're just like, what? I was like, why did you say that?
I was actually thinking exactly this on the bus. I think it's like a generational thing.
Maybe.
Because it's like an inbuilt humility thing. Yes. Of like, you mustn't get up yourself, you know. You've got to, like, it's almost like someone might say something good, because this is my whole upbringing. It's like the struggle to have done what I'm doing has been fighting my own fucking genetics to bring myself down. Do you know what I mean? It's I'm seen as like the black sheep of my family because I'm the only one that's got self-confidence.
Yeah,
but I'm like, yeah, but that's not natural.
I've had to fight that.
I've had to make that happen by going, no, I'm brilliant. I fuck everyone else. Like, and sometimes I say that, like my mum and dad be like, I'll be like, well, this producer gave me this stupid note of like blah, blah, blah. And they'll be like, well, maybe all of your writing is terrible. And I'll be like, I'll have to sort of go, no.
Hang on a sec.
I was saying that. and then I'll sort of go into a diatribe and there'll be silence, like family silence. Oh, Alice is very overconfident. You know, and I'm just like, what do you expect? Look at the way. Look at
what I'm about to fight this. Yeah.
It's hilarious because my sister is, well, it's not hilarious, but my sister is utterly, the inner critic is alive and well within her.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to go, Rosanna, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're good or bad. No one gives a shit.
Yeah, just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just have the job. Get the job. Be happy.
Then worry about it. Yeah.
It's for other people to decide whether you're good or bad. It's not for you, you know. Just get on with the work. But that is fighting a whole, I think, and I think it is generational. Because my mum and dad could have had other careers, but they just wouldn't have dared to. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they could have been, my mum could have been an artist if she wanted to.
Yeah.
She could have, you know, been a documentary maker. But the arrogance that they would have had to have to think that that was their destiny.
But a lot of it is an act, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, a lot of people are just, I think that's what I didn't realise for a long time, is that they're just kind of, I remember talking about finding auditions really hard to Dan Skinner, and he just went, he looked at me like really confused.
I had the same conversation with Dan Skinner. Really? He went, I love them.
Yeah. He was like, pretend, just act like you're really good at them, or act like you're really happy with them. And I was like, I can't do that.
No, I can't, you know, do that.
But he was just a bit like baffled, a bit like, how could that
he
be?
He told me that he loved auditions.
Yeah,
and
that
he,
would
every
make
time
sense.
He walked in, he thought, I am the best person for this job, and if you don't hire me, it's because you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
and that's what he goes in thinking.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
But you've got to. That gets you to zero. Because it's not like he gets everything. Do you know what I mean? Like, he would be the first to say, it's not like that's why he's now a Hollywood A-lister.
Yeah.
Like, but just, it keeps you
happy,
like,
I suppose.
Yeah, and also protected, I think. It keeps you, like, strong, I guess. Oh, I don't know. It's bloody hard.
It's a difficult one. I would have this conversation happily with anyone about how much I hate auditions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so glad I don't have to do those anymore.
No. Well.
Anyway.
Yeah, you could be tempted.
I don't. Do you know what? Funny enough, doing this podcast has reminded, because I just thought, I know that's dead. I don't want to do that anymore. And then doing this, I was working really hard on it, and I was like, listening, re-listening, editing, like putting it out there, getting it, you know, giving it to people who I'd never usually give it to.
And you have to have this sort of confidence about that.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, maybe the performer in me hasn't died. Maybe she didn't mean, but in a different way. Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because I feel that when I had Della, it was like a big letting go.
Yeah.
And actually, when you let go, that's when the stuff comes to you.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. It's like, I really was like, oh, well, I've had a baby. It's the end of my career. Well, let's screw it all. It doesn't matter, does it? I might as well. I'll just try and get some money now.
Yeah.
And weirdly, that was when stuff happened and the right things fell into place. And like,
and what do you think? So when you were pregnant, we were talking about this. I don't know if you've listened to any of the past episodes. Who was I talking about this with?
I've listened to some bits of...
I was listening to Lucy.
Oh, yeah.
Talking to Lucy, and I was like, you see, I remember, because we had babies around the same time, and I was like, and I remember you were sort of saying, yeah, well, I'm writing, you know, Della sits on my lap. I remember you saying that, and I remember thinking, oh my God, like, I thought I was doing quite a lot, but I'm not doing anything, so what was the kind of motivation between, you know, you filmed and wrote, did you write... Is it Prevenge or Prevenge?
Yeah, Prevenge, I call it.
Did you write it while you were pregnant?
Yes.
It was quite a quick turnaround, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I was developing something with Film 4 and it was just taking ages. And I can't remember, there was like a catastrophic series of events. Like, I was pregnant and I was sort of keeping it secret because I knew well, they're not going to prioritise my film, the pregnant, you know, filmmaker or whatever.
Yeah.
And then my script editor, one day she didn't turn up for a meeting and she'd been in this terrible cycling accident where she was in intensive care.
Oh my
Someone,
God.
A cyclist had knocked her down. And because I was writing by myself, that was my one of my main, you know, points of contact.
Yeah.
And then my producer was leaving Warp to work at the BFI. And that I had this meeting with Film 4 on the day that the announcement came out that she was moving to the BFI. And I just remember going, this is like a perfect storm.
Yeah,
I'm four
yeah,
months
yeah,
pregnant
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just was like, this isn't going to happen. And I was sort of really resigned to going, well, let's just have the baby. You know, I'm probably not going to direct now. I'll carry on getting a bit of acting work. And I was kind of saying yes to everything because I was kind of second trimester and I was like, okay, yes, I will go to Edinburgh and do some character comedy for 3 nights.
Yeah.
I will say yes to writing that short story even though it's not paying me very much money. I will, you know, and I was just going, yes, 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 I've got energy now. Actually quite bizarre energy.
Yeah.
Hormonal energy. And then a filmmaker called Jamie Adams, who I did an improvised film with called Black Mountain Poets, and it was a 5-day shoot, which I had never thought was possible to do a feature in 5 days, but I did a 5-day shoot feature with him. And he came to me and said, look, I think I've got some access to some private funding for a feature film. Have you got anything? And I was like, I really don't. I'm pregnant and I, you know, I just don't know what's happening really with all the film stuff because I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
So I'm screwed, basically. And he just went, oh, okay, and went away. And then he came back to me and he went, he just sent me a message on Facebook because he's a bit mad. And he just was like, have you got anything for Cara Delevingne? Which is quite typical Jamie, if you knew him. He's sort of
and you were like, where do I start?
Yeah, where do I start? And I actually wrote him this really angry message where I went, Jamie, I'm 6 months pregnant. If I take a low budget job writing a feature film for Cara fucking Delevingne, what do I get out of that? What do I get out of that? 50 quid?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was like, if I'm going to write a rom-com for Cara Delevingne, I will take it to working title and they
yeah.
will pay me properly. Thank
yeah.
you very much. But it's not really on my priority list right now. If I'm going to do something, it's going to be for me, about
yeah.
me. You know, it's
yeah.
got to be something that's going to help
yeah.
my bloody career because
yeah,
I haven't got
yeah,
any money.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, okay, let's do that then. And I was like, shit. Because I really didn't have any intention to do
no.
anything.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then I went away and went, okay, well, how could this work? And I'd always sort of had this thing of like, why isn't there a female taxi driver? Why do we never get maverick female characters and anti-hero heroines sort of characters? And I combined that with being pregnant and it just fell into place and I
yeah.
just pitched it as a one-liner. And Jamie was like, this is amazing. And the company I'm working with, I've told them about it and they want it.
Yeah.
And I went and met them and it was just like that thing where you go, why didn't I meet you 10 years ago? This
yeah,
production
yeah.
company, they were just like, we think it's amazing, let's just do it. And I was like, can we do it in a month and a half's time?
Wow.
Because I will be 7.5 months pregnant. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. So I wrote
that
it.
That is really rare though.
Very rare.
Like just
very
the
rare.
Yes, 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 let's
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
So how was it like, you know, filming all that stuff, because it's quite violent, obviously, and, you know,
yeah.
and you're 7.5 months pregnant.
Do you know what? All of that was fine. Because I was directing it, I was, like, in my head storyboarding it and going, well, there's never going to be anything really dangerous that I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I had, like, stunt doubles, and I had,
yeah.
like, I was cutting away before anything actually had contact. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I was
yeah,
sort
yeah.
of finding ways of doing it, but which you do anyway for an
yeah,
action film,
yeah.
you're, especially low budget. You're like,
yeah.
well, we haven't got a prosthetic, which is a bouncing head,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
severed head or whatever. So we cut away before that moment, whatever. All of that was fine actually, and I loved the shoot. I absolutely adored it, and it was so pleasurable. I think it distracted me in a good time,
yeah,
just
yeah.
when I was probably would have been quite bored and feeling a bit like, I'm uncomfortable, and I'm, you know, thinking about when's this baby going to come out.
Yeah.
I was actually so busy.
Yeah,
that
you didn't think about it.
I wasn't thinking about it. And I would forget that I was pregnant. People
yeah.
would be like, do you want to sit down? I'd be like, no, why?
Yeah.
And they'd be like, because you're pregnant. I was like, oh, I thought you were like thinking because I was director or something. Anyway, I was just like, absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I loved it. The difficult part was after all of that, promoting the film. and stuff, which I never really.
So you did that when Della was really little.
So the film premiered at Venice when she was 6 months old.
Wow.
So, but before that, I'd been doing all the post production, you know, visiting Brighton where the composers live in their studio. I'd been going to Wales to do the grade. I'd been going to, you know, whatever. And that was sort of okay because all of those environments, you can have a baby.
Yeah, you could be breastfeeding a baby.
And the edit, of course,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if a baby's making a noise, you know.
Yeah.
But I have to say, you know, you were saying like, oh my God, you're writing with Della on your knee. Della was an extraordinarily well-behaved baby.
Right.
And I was quite aware how lucky we were because I was like, I don't know if I would have done any of it if she'd been like had colic or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Because you've started something. Like, there's not, it's not, you can't just go, well, delay it. That's it. It's out there by the time she's born.
Yeah, you can't just go, can I edit it next year?
Yeah.
It's a train and it's just moving. But actually, I sort of enjoyed all of that stuff and that was kind of okay. It was manageable because she was carryable, you know. It was more like, so I went to Venice and I took Paul, my partner, who's Della's dad. And that was lovely and it was like amazing and glamorous and exciting. And,
yeah.
You know, the film's being seen for the first time, so you're properly getting the red carpet treatment of like people going, oh, we're so happy to have your film at our festival and stuff. So that was just amazing. And then after that, Paul was like, right, that was my time off. I'm back to work.
Yeah.
And I was then going to Toronto, LA, New York, Stockholm, Helsinki, Paris, do you know what I mean?
With your baby.
With the baby. And,
oh my God.
Yeah, and long haul flights and.
On your own.
On
obviously.
My own with the baby. So I was doing that for the next year, I would say. Like,
oh my God.
You know. And the thing is, you want to do those things.
Yeah.
Because you're like,
of course.
My God, it's my film showing these festivals.
Yeah.
When did I ever think that was going to happen? And, you know. It didn't have the budget of something like Sightseers, where I was a bit more expectant with the level of Ben Wheatley's career that, you know, those things, good things happen, but it was sort of more expected at the level he was at. And, and we had all of us as well. It was like three of us. So you could, you're sharing the burden of the interviews and the kind
of
press and stuff like that. And maybe Ben would go to one Q&A, but me and Steve wouldn't. You know, or vice versa or something.
But so you were doing everything.
I was doing everything. So I was like...
So how did that impact you as a mum? Like, how was that? How did that manifest itself? Like, did it?
Well,
you must have been exhausted.
I think I was in complete denial that I was tired. I think I was like, I'm doing this. This is amazing. This is incredible. Of course, I'm fine. You know, and I am sleeping, and it's fine. And then there was this point where I'd been in LA, and I had got bed bugs when I was in the hotel, even though it was quite a posh hotel.
Oh, God.
And I'd got tonsillitis at the same time. And I was just exhausted. And it was quite lonely, actually. It was lonely being in LA because I was like, I've got some friends here, but they don't have a baby or they're not.
So you can't go out at night.
Yeah, I couldn't go and have a drink. And I couldn't really... I don't have a car, can't drive. So I didn't...
Whoa,
I couldn't, like,
hard,
go...
It
was quite hard to go and see people and go and do stuff. So... it was just quite a strange sort of lonely trip that I was a bit like, this is quite weird. And I don't really like LA that much.
No.
I found it a bit alien. And I was going to all these meetings, but I was taking cabs. And if you can imagine that with all the baby stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I was going to meetings with
Jesus.
Like big producers with Della. So it's like, I met the producer of I, Tonya.
Oh, wow.
And I think he was sort of high on the success of I, Tonya. He was sort of like, I just made this film. About it, and Margot Robbie, and there was this ice skate in the reception which was filled with flowers, which had obviously been some gift, like to the wrap party gift. So, but he was like really astonished by Della, and he was like, oh my God, there's a baby, oh my God, look at her. It was like he was like, because I was like, this isn't a gimmick. Like,
no,
you
no.
Understand? People
and also,
were like thinking,
you've
is it a
seen
gimmick
the film,
bought?
Presumably, in which case, you know that I was pregnant in that film. Like, that's what it's all about.
You know the deal,
in a way.
But it was like, because like when I was in Toronto and I got my agents, you know, I met a few different American agencies. And, you know, I'm meeting these my three agents, my three American agents, and I'm breastfeeding Della. And I'm like, This is almost like something that they would tell as an anecdote.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all there being cool about it, but I can tell they are probably like, this is new. This is a probably.
And how
like,
are you about it? Did you feel comfortable and confident about it?
I didn't care.
Yeah, right.
I didn't care. I was like, just, you know, she'll go to sleep when I've done this. It'll be fine, you know. Yeah. But they're kind of like, okay, you know. So there's all that sort of element where I'm taking the baby and I'm just going, yeah, I'm going to be cool about it and you're going to be cool about it and we're all going to be cool about it. It's going to be fine. And no, I'm not tired. I'm fine. Look at me. But there was like a crunch point where I'd sort of gone to America, got tonsillitis, had a very long flight, and then I came back knackered and I had committed to going to Stockholm like the next day. And I had to get on the plane and then I think it's Stockholm, they start to blend into one, but you think, oh, it's child friendly and cool.
Yeah.
But they take your pram away in Stockholm airport, you know, so you don't pick up your pram on the other side.
God.
Like, you have to go to baggage claim.
Yeah, I've had that, yeah.
And I sort of was arriving at about 9 o'clock at night in Stockholm and with all my nappy bag and blah, blah, and I had to carry my daughter to the passport control.
Yeah.
And it was one of those airports.
She's now older.
Really,
like, she's not like, it's not like she's 3 months. She's like, what?
She was probably like 10 months or something. So she's crawling a bit, but she's not. And I remember I just like felt, there was a point where I got to the passport control and there was no one there because it was quite quiet.
Yeah.
But it still had the, you know, the little security
ropes. Oh, that you have to kind of zigzag. All the way. Yeah, yeah, right.
And I just kind of fell to my knees in a really overdramatic way. And I was just crying. And like Della was just sort of crawling under these barriers, like giggling. And I was just like, somebody help me.
Yeah.
And nobody did. So I just sat there for about 20 minutes. And then I was like, come on, we're getting back up again because we've got to do
this. That's the deal,
you know?
Isn't it? Like in a film, someone would, that would be your moment and someone would help you.
Yeah.
But in reality, you sit there for 20 minutes and then you have to go, right.
Right. Come
here
on,
we go. Let's get up. Let's
come
go.
Come on. Wipe mummy's nose with a nappy. And like, but also that's not really typical of me. But I mean, anyone could say that's got a new baby. I was just sleep deprived, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I
and
was
doing
like,
everything.
Why am I in Stockholm? Why am I here? Why have I done this to myself? And that, I then went on and had a really nice time and blah, blah, blah. You know, actually some friends, luckily, some friends, like a filmmaker friend of mine called Rachel Tannard was there with her boyfriend and they both work in the film industry, and I was just like, I am so happy to see you.
Yeah.
I'm losing my mind.
Yeah,
and
they
were so nice to me. And I was like, if you weren't here, I would be just, I'd probably hide in my room and just not come out and just sleep because I've made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this. And that was the point when I look back and I'm like, I wasn't really coping. I was just sort of on some sort of weird denial of the whole situation of just like, I can do this. Watch me.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
And I wonder if you were talking before about the energy, like the second trimester and there being a tremendous energy, creative energy that like led to this film and, you know, and you're kind of doing it all. And I wonder if some of that might be...
It's got to give. Someone's got to give at some
point. Yeah, there's a point
there's
at
payback.
Which... Yeah, exactly. And have you seen the film Tully?
No, but I really want to.
Goodness me, it's all about that.
Yeah.
It's. I won't give anything away. You just watch
it.
It's so good.
I think I know what the twist is. I mean, I'm a big fan of the screenwriter,
Diablo
Cody,
isn't it?
And I think also her films get really misunderstood in a really strange way. Like I read this amazing book, article about Jennifer's Body, which she wrote a few years ago. And it was sort of saying if that had come out now, it'd be a hit.
Yes.
Because people would understand it.
Yeah.
And it's just, she's just ahead of her time. So she just keeps writing stuff that people catch up to like 5-10 years later.
This film, it was so well observed. Just the basic mundanity of, like, of looking after a baby and looking after kids.
Mm.
I was weeping. I was sobbing just because it chimed so much. You know, it's not a sad film. Like, it's not, you know, it's really...
Well, it's just funny. We don't see those details.
You just don't see that. No.
You see the cliche of, like, I'm a tired mum walking around. But you don't see, like, well, this is the bit... This is what you have to do every day. And... I mean, there's one film, there's this book by Margaret Drabble called The Millstone, and it was written in, like, the 60s, maybe even 50s, and it's about a woman who's a single mother and she has a baby, unmarried.
Yeah.
And it was quite a sort of, you know, wow, like groundbreaking at the time. Yeah. But you read it now and it's a modern read. It feels really modern.
Right.
But she writes just about things like sitting in an NHS waiting room.
Yeah.
And there being other people with children. And I'm just like, you don't read about this. You do not read about it.
No.
And then it's been made into a... It was made into a film in, like, the 60s, which nobody's seen. But, again, it's like those scenes were so powerful. Just someone sitting in an NHS waiting room who's pregnant next to a woman who's got four kids and just going, oh, my God, like, this is hard work and this
but
is...
But you realise we consume...
Depersonalising.
And we consume so much, you know, much more so than... anyone did in the 60s, let alone, I mean, not probably even in the 80s, you know, but like we consume so many stories, whether it's on TV or, you know, podcasts or whatever, whatever, like where there's so many stories, when reality is then reflected back at you, there's this kind of like almost like visceral, physical relief to hear something being told true, you know, truth rather than like, we've got the hassled mother.
Or a copy of another film. This is something reality.
Yeah.
And it's so... It hits you, doesn't it? It's sort of like, it's
really
very
powerful.
Rare that you see something that isn't just copying another film or another TV show. And when you see it, you're like... And then the weird thing is, you kind of go, other people feel that too. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
And it's the humanity of it, isn't it? It's just like, you know, you're brought into contact with your own physical body when you have a baby.
Yeah.
When I got ill, it was kind of like, I couldn't deny my physical body anymore.
Yeah.
It was like... And I think afterwards I had much more the fallout of being tired, like more when she was sort of one and then starting to move around and you know, wanting more attention and needing more attention. I was like, oh, juggling this with work is much
harder.
And
how did you do that? Did you get... I'm waiting for you to go, and then I had 3 months where I just like chilled out and it's like there's nothing. It's just went on and on and on.
It just went on and on. I think I used to do a lot of writing at night, probably.
Yeah.
She used to have a 3-hour nap, and I wrote a feature film in her 3-hour naps.
Oh, my
she
God.
Doesn't have the 3-hour nap anymore, but it's okay because she's at nursery now.
Yeah.
So, but that is when I, and you know that cliche of like, you consolidate your, you know, you get a lot done, and I would just get a lot done. And I just found that I was really focusing in those hours that I had. And then, you know, if I was filming and stuff, I would get childcare, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a low-budget film that I did, so I didn't get much money for doing that. And then when you're promoting a film, which nobody tells you, when you've done an independent film and it does better than expected, you're not earning any money and you can't earn any money because you're in Stockholm. So that was... That was quite scary, actually, that I had this sort of thing of, like, I cannot earn any money. I've not earned any money for, like, the past 6 months because I've just been travelling around the world.
Yeah.
Expenses paid. But, and that was then a shock of, like, on the surface, my picture is on the tube on a poster, but actually I don't have any money.
Yeah.
And, like, that was scary.
Hello? A long car. I made a long car.
So childcare was not an option because I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
But I was getting commissions for stuff. So I was like, can you write this? Can you do this? Can you do this?
Yeah.
So I, Raising Films put me in contact with CBTF, which is a charity for film and television. And they gave me a grant which helps with childcare.
Oh, wow.
And they've asked me to actually help get it out that it's available, this fund.
Yeah.
And it's exactly for what the situation I was in. It's people who've coming out of maternity leave.
Yeah.
They're freelancers and they're in a situation where they're like, I've got work, but I cannot even embark on it because I can't afford the childcare.
Yeah.
And it's to that sort of stopgap kind of money. And it was, that was what I needed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I wrote them to thank them recently and just said, I wrote a feature film with the money that you gave me.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I started getting like someone to look after Della just one day a week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But those sort of
precious
6 hours
or
whatever, that's when I'd be, you know, getting a lot done.
Did you find that the work that you did once you were pregnant and once Della was born changed? I mean, you were talking before about how you were more confident at saying no and that suddenly made you like be more in demand?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Prevention did. I don't know why. It's always very puzzling to me that after Sightseers, I was like, brilliant. This has got a lot of attention. I'm like, any parts that Olivia Colman doesn't get, I'm probably going to get them now.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, the phone's going to be ringing off the hook. Yeah. And it just did not happen, which was a real shock. Yeah. And, you know, again, the lesson learned of never rest on your laurels. But it was like quite stark. It was like... oh, back to square one, you know.
And also you've been presumably working throughout your career to that point. You think, once I make a film, once I've done that, then it'll be all rosy. And you're like, what, not even then?
Yes. You know, no, yeah, you yeah, are. Yeah. You're like, not even now? And it was like stupid things like I was getting BIFFA nominated for Best Actress in categories with like Judi Dench and Meryl Streep. Yeah. I was up against Meryl Streep and Judi Dench. I was like, this is it. I've made it, you know. Yeah. And then the next day I get an email from this young filmmaker going, will you play this silent role in my short film of Mum? You know, unpaid. But I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is awful. Anyway, it was just like, okay, it's not enough. It's still not enough. I've got to keep going. Oh, my God. And so I was keeping going and I was keeping trying to get that work and... And then Prevenge changed everything. It was just suddenly people... It was like they... I sometimes joke about this. I said, I've had to eliminate all of my male collaborators for people to actually realise that I can do stuff. Yeah. It's like if people have always thought it was a fluke before. Like, you were in that thing. You were involved in that really good thing. But it was them that did it, though, wasn't it?
But people always... I remember Laura Solon saying, because I was in a sketch group with two guys, and I remember Laura Solon saying to me, you need to push yourself further in, because I was like often the kind of fall guy, and she was like, you need to push yourself more because people will assume that they write all the jokes and that they're the funny ones. And I was like, no, people won't. And sure enough, that's exactly what they did.
It's amazing.
Yeah, people, it's so true.
I mean, people still say to me, like, you wrote Sightseers. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realise. Yeah. I didn't realise that you co-wrote it. And you're like, oh, my God, my destiny gets robbed by these freaking men, like, all the time. I mean, you know, I've been lucky that I've worked with, like, amazing people that I've learned a hell of a lot from. So I don't blame it on them. It's like, it's other people and the perception.
It's just the way society looks,
Yeah, and also I blame myself because I've chosen that situation. I've not believed in myself enough to have gone, like, why couldn't you just done your own thing 15 years ago? Why is it taking you this long?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's a fear. It's like you're hiding behind other people because you're like, well, they're good, so they'll make this good. And if I took it over, it would be bad. So I just must hide behind this person.
But I also wondered whether having a child helps define that. Like, I feel that that's the case with me. I feel like it's been a really, like, useful turning point. Mm. And I've changed my focus slightly and everything seems more important.
Well, I think it's the other way around for me. It's made it less important. Yeah, I just feel like it's just work. It's great. I love it. But it's not as important as my kids.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've got earned money.
Yeah.
If it's something that that fulfills me, bonus.
Yeah.
Also, if the work that I'm doing is bad, that's not for me to decide. It's for someone else to decide. Yeah. I just offer up to the universe what I've got and what I do.
Yeah.
And if people don't like it, that's, you know, you just keep working.
Yeah.
And I used to be much more like, what if people judge me for this? Yeah. What if it? And it's actually a very sort of quite vain, egotistical way of being, you know, that you're sort of like, I'm worried that people might not like what I'm doing. So, and now I'm just like, I just don't care. I just don't care. It's like, I do what I do. I don't know if it's any good or not, ever. Like, you know, if it gets made, it gets made. And actually, that's such a liberating thing because it helps you to move on. Like, okay, I did something that was bad, move on. What's the next thing?
And
I think people pick up on those vibes as well, that they know that you're kind of, you've got this innate self-confidence that you're kind of like, you know, it's just a job. It's sort of like you go, we'll make this work. We'll get it so until it's working. Like you're a car mechanic or something. Yeah. And that's what I think a lot of comedy is like that. It's like a lot of everything is like that. It's like it's not working yet, but all of us are good and we've got good judgment. We'll keep working on it until it's good. It's what's the stress about that? Yeah. Like why should that be nervous breakdown time. It's like, it's just a job. Like, yeah. just turn up, do some work making it better, and then it will be better.
Yeah.
I just think that's... And it's really helped me, actually, to let go, I think, the Della, having Della, because I just think that, I even the idea of Prevenge, it was almost like, oh, this is probably a crap idea, but, you know, whatever.
But also that you had to do it. You had to do it while you were pregnant. You had to just get it done. You couldn't dick around by going, oh, maybe we'll do it.
It couldn't be overanalyzed. It couldn't be overly pulled apart. Yeah. And, just striking while the iron's hot. And I'm trying to emulate that with the next pieces of work that I do. And I think you still meet this kind of resistance, and you realise that actually a lot of it is in you to go. I'm trying to be a lot stronger now in meetings where I do go, if you don't like that, it's because you don't understand it.
Yeah.
And without being arrogant, but to go sort of like, it does work.
I think that's an age thing as well. I'm definitely like that now, like, where I'm like, you're not like pointlessly contrary, you know, or like kind of almost like childishly contrary, but you're kind of like, no, that's fine, you're just not getting that. Let me explain that again. I'm obviously not explaining that to you well enough.
For me, I'm like, well, this is what I do. This is what you've paid for.
Yeah.
Is that being unexpected, that thing that you're like, that was weird that happened. I'm like, well, that's what I do.
That's my
you've
thing.
Bought it, don't know if you're, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with my work, but that's why you've hired me. And I do sort of go, sometimes you go, the thing that they're pointing out as a quirk that they don't quite understand, that I'm like, but that's what's going to make it stand out. And that's a self-realization as well. Yeah. I'm like, well, it isn't quite normal, any of the stuff that I'm doing, but I will make it work because it's to do with being a performer as well as a writer. And you're sort of going, well, that's what you've bought, that's the package that you've bought thing. It's not going to be like the standard developed TV show, because that isn't what I do. Like, it's never going to be like that. So why are you trying to make it like that?
Did you ever have, Sarah Soleimani talked about sort of people assuming that she's going to want to bring her baby on set, do like certain things a certain way, you know, that she used a phrase where they were like, mummy will need to be with baby, and she was like, actually, do you know what, she'll be better off with my husband while I can focus on this. Like, do you ever get people assuming that you're going to want to do things a certain way, or is it
not really? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't acting for a while, so I was doing all this kind of promotion of the film, but I wasn't doing much acting with a small baby. And I actually found it more the other way, that I was having to say, if I'm filming on this, I do need 3-hour breaks use the breast pump.
Yeah.
Like, I do need to do this. And I started asking for productions to pay for childcare, that, and a lot of them said yes. But I think that's kind of something that is special to having a very small child, that they do know that, like, it might be the difference between you doing it or not doing it. Or, you know.
And did you find that difficult, or was there any pushback from that, or was that fairly straightforward?
It was pretty amazing. No, there was no problem with it. And I think that mainly that was because of Prevenge, it being so obvious that I was pregnant. You can't say that you don't know I have a child, because that's, you know,
that's all part
the film
of,
that you saw or whatever when you hired me. But so no, I didn't have any problem with that at all, actually. It was quite amazing. And I think it's more now that as she gets older that I'm sort of going, well, do I get special dispensation? And people are a bit more like, no.
She's
16
now.
I've got a 17-year-old. Right. Yeah. I'm not, like, requesting special measures. So I think it gets less as they get older.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's sometimes quite interesting when you're having to remind people that, you know, someone's giving you a call sheet and they're not giving you a call sheet, you know, and they're like, you'll be needed on Tuesday. And I'm like, I do need to know the hours.
Yeah.
Because I am hiring a babysitter. So I need to know when I'll be leaving the house. I need to know quite soon. And that can be quite frustrating when someone, say it's quite a young team that you're working with or something, and they're just like, you know, clueless about it.
Yeah,
basically.
You can't tell me this on Monday night at 10 o'clock. You can't send me this at 10 o'clock on Monday night.
Yeah, and I'm not shy about going no. And that's the other thing about how, like, I do just say no to stuff.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, like, because I genuinely have less time and I'm more tired, and I'm more like, I'm just a bit more like, I don't care as much what people think of me anymore. I don't ever want someone to think I'm rude or nasty, obviously, but you know, all this weird sort of stuff with acting where it's a bit like, you should really go to that audition because that casting person might, they don't know you and they'll get to know you, and then, and you know, you never know, this part's not right for you, but then another one might
it doesn't work like that.
You go, oh god, I'm gonna have to like stay up all night learning this 20 page script and being terrified and, you know, right, wearing the right clothes and spending half an hour putting on the right makeup and and getting really nervous and maybe even paying for childcare if you've got kids, you know, and then it can all be for nothing. And I've really started saying, like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just not doing it. Yeah. If they don't want, I just don't think I'm going to get it. I don't think I'm right for it.
Yeah.
And if they want me, they can just offer it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not a household name, but I think within the industry...
You've done enough now, yeah.
People know what I do, and if they don't, they can look it up on YouTube and find some clips. Do you know what I mean?
I can send them some links. Yeah. I can't come in, but I can send them several links and they
just
can see.
My name is Alice Lowe. That's L-O-W-E. If you just Google that, some stuff will come up. You know?
And then and you can see whether you're...
Yeah. And it's just a bit like... I mean, maybe people think you're... there'll be a percentage of people that just think you're an arsehole for doing that. What I found is I've got more work by taking that approach, which is crazy because people do go, okay, we'll offer it to you.
Or, and it is all about that. It's all Emperor's New Clothes, isn't it? It's sort of saying, oh, I'm very valuable and I'm going to act like a valuable person. And then people go, oh, she's really valuable. Yeah. We're going to ear in. Yeah.
It's a status game. It's crazy. And the weird thing is I don't even feel like I'm playing it anymore, because the thing is, what you have to be sure is that you genuinely don't care if you get the role or not. And the thing is, you know, realistically, if you've got quite specific tastes, there's probably like... 3 jobs come along every year that I actually like, I'm
really
desperate
want.
To do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's not that much parts for women over 35 anyway, as we know.
Yeah.
And I've got quite specific tastes, so the chances that I'm going to be desperate to do it are quite small.
Quite slim.
But when I was younger, I wouldn't have dared
just everything.
To,
I
would have just been like... Which was probably right at the time, you know, to show willing and stuff. But I never got those roles.
No.
I never got the ones that I was like, I'm not sure that I'm right for this. I always say, I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to talk about it, but I auditioned for this Call the Midwife special, Christmas special, like a couple of years ago. And I had to be a menopausal woman who was going into labour, but not realising. And she had to be screaming, but I've had the change. I have no idea who got the role. But I was pregnant at the time when I went for the audition. And I was just like going, I think that was probably the depths of depression at that particular point where I was like, where is my career going? I'm having to scream, I've had the change.
And I'm pregnant.
And I'm pregnant. The irony of that. But also they think I'm old enough to be menopausal.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just there going, I don't even watch Call the Midwife. Why have I come to do this? Like, I've just come to beat myself up. Like...
But you
like
can
that.
Get caught in a kind of like a sort of treadmill of stuff, I think, where you sort of feel like you're doing it because you... I think that, and it's a partly being self-employed, which is a sort of thing of always wanting to say yes and be available and be open to opportunity and blah blah. And then there's a point where you kind of go, actually, I can't, you know, I'm in my 40s, I can't do that forever, and I need to kind of tailor it more, and I need to kind of say no to things and be, as you say, willing to risk not getting it in order to value myself and it to fit.
I also think that male actors, because there's less of them but more roles, do that a lot earlier. I think they do a lot, partly because of maybe more innate self-confidence, but also I don't know, I just remember like very early on, like my male peers going, oh no, I just said I'm, you know, you've got to offer it to me. Or like even saying to me, I don't do auditions anymore, I don't have to. You know, I just get straight offers. And me just going, but you're at the same level as me. Why?
Yeah.
You know, and actually this was like, I remember with the IT Crowd.
Yeah.
So all of the people in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place were offered main roles in that show.
Yes.
And I had to audition to do about 10 lines. Like, and I'm... That time where there weren't that many female comics, and you know, there was Catherine Tate and that was it. There wasn't like loads of female stand-ups and stuff, like Jenny Eclair, that was about it. And I just was like, I'm just shit. in relation to them. I am shit. Like, they're brilliant and I'm not proper.
And they must think that they're proper and I'm not.
Yeah, and I believed that real deal. All the way through my 20s. I was like, I'm a fraud. I'm not really that funny. I'm only funny because of the people I've worked with and they've taught me. And I'm not really good at this. You know, I don't really understand comedy. I don't really know what it is. And I don't, you know, I'm just lucky. I'm just lucky that I got to work with those people. Yeah. And I sort of believed that all the way through my 20s because that's the way... And some of that, as I said, that's because...
It's reinforced by...
Well, you know, casting agents will be going, well, we've only got 10 men to choose from and they're already quite high profile. We have to offer it to them. Whereas there are 40 women and even though some of them are quite high profile, they're still desperate for work.
Yeah.
So we'll get them all in. And I think that would be fascinating if you worked in casting to really look at how... that works, you know, the wealth of actresses that there are to choose from.
God, I'd never thought of that before. I didn't realise
that
was the case.
Well, there's more applicants to drama school that are women
that
and men.
Make sense.
There's,
there's
just more... I think there's just... I don't know if this is true, but I think there's just more actresses than there are actors.
That would make sense. I'd never thought of that before, but yeah.
And there's less roles.
Yeah.
So your confidence and your value, your market value is just automatically lower.
Yeah.
And so the status of, you know, I always just felt like this interloper of like, you know, is she funny? Is she funny? Can we check?
But also...
We know she's worked with those people. It's probably that they are talented. It's somehow...
Yeah, they like her for some reason. Why would they like her? You know, it's like...
Yeah. And... I call it sort of Pygmalion syndrome, that there'll be men that you work with that are like, I made you.
Yeah.
You'd be nothing without me.
Yeah.
You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you.
Even the phrase, I discovered you, I always find weird. I remember when we briefly did well and people would say that, several different people would say that, and you'd go... I existed before, a long time before.
It wasn't like this doll.
I met you.
This doll that you switched the on switch when you met me.
We created. We spent a long time creating the show that you then saw, which you discovered. Do you know what I mean? Like,
And the qualities that I already had were unleashed.
Yes.
When, you know, I unleashed them.
Yes. And you happened to witness that.
Yeah.
You weren't, you were a bystander.
Yeah. And it's all of that stuff, which I think is really changing now because there's so much female-led content, which suddenly everyone's like, my God, this is the most exciting thing ever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
People want to watch it. And and so a lot is changing. But I just remember that, you know, those early years in comedy really haunted me for a long time, where it was almost like post-traumatic stress disorder or something, where I was like, I don't know how to be funny and I don't know what I'm doing. And someone once told me as well that I couldn't improvise and that they wouldn't let me improvise.
But that's like the worst thing to say. That's the opposite of yes anding.
Yeah.
Just saying that is killing that idea,
just
isn't
saying,
it?
Saying you can't do it.
Yeah.
And for ages I thought, I can't do that. And of course it's like one of the main things I do in my work now.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether I'm good or not, it's not for me to decide at it. But, you know, it was just one of these things where you're not being allowed to flourish, basically. And why that should be anyone's fault, I don't know. It was just my stupidity for allowing someone to make me feel that way, perhaps you could say. But, just this bizarre sort of thing where you're disempowered, I think, really early on as in your career as a woman.
Yeah.
And it's like you were just talking about doing your podcast. It's sort of you regain a voice that you go, oh my God, like
I'm relaxed.
Something.
Yeah, and I'm relaxed because I have complete control over it. I record it, I edit it, I do everything, so no one can, you know, if it's shit, that's all my fault. But if it's good, that's all me. That's no one messing and saying, should it be set in a swimming pool?
Stop talking! I'm gonna get frustrated.
One thing that we talked about before was the mother you thought you'd be, which was maybe one who would go, right, I'm going to outsource that. I'm going to, do you know what I mean?
I think even if I did think that, I would never have had the money to outsource stuff. But yeah, I did definitely think I was going to be like a really terrible mum who didn't really like her child and probably didn't want to spend much time with her. And it was completely opposite. I think it's something about being an older mum as well, that I was a bit like bored of my own company.
Yeah.
And like a bit like, I don't go out anyway. Like what, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, what else
like,
am I going to be doing?
Yeah. Because I like, you know, I've become really boring in my old age and like I'm bored of parties and whatevers. And I was sort of really surprised how much I really was like liking hanging out with Della. And I didn't really feel that boredom of like... being up for a start, I was travelling all over the world, so I didn't have a chance to be bored really. But but I just liked hanging out with her, you know. And I was really surprised. I was like, oh my god, I really like. I just want to spend 24/7 with this person. And I'm still like that now. Like I've never had a single night away from her. I would never judge anyone else for doing anything different, but I surprise myself that I am really like that. That I'm like, oh no, no, no. At night.
Also, I think people think it's really binary. Like, either you're working really hard and not really seeing your kid, or you're wanting to be with your child all the time and not wanting to work. It's like, no, I want both.
Yeah.
I really love hanging out with my kids, but I also like working. I could not work. So, financially, but also just intellectually, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, it's quite.
But also, that kind of thing of just like, who says you can't mix it? It's like, take the kid with you. It's it's not ideal sometimes, but like, why not? If you expect people to be okay with it, then people are okay with it. That's the thing that I learned. I was like, and then other people might go, oh, maybe this is acceptable, actually. Yeah, maybe I'll bring my kid next week. And then you normalise it. Like, you know, when I had Della at these festivals and she was in a pram, and like sometimes I was like, they were like, hey, you're going to come to the IFC party in Toronto? And I'm like, yeah, I think it's going to be some like champagne and canapes. And it's like banging house in a basement. And I take the pram down in the lift, and the security guard is like, I'm sorry, ma'am, you cannot bring an infant in here. And I was like, really? Oh, I just got a cocktail, so...
And were you all dressed up with a cocktail and a stroller?
Not only as much as, like, I would be dressed up because I'd just shown the film and done a Q&A, but, you know...
But I can imagine you would look pretty foxy, like...
I just was a bit like, oh, I didn't know what sort of party it was. I did actually leave, but... But it was quite funny because I would be going to drinks things and like I'd be having a chat with someone and then they'd sort of go, oh my God, there's a pram behind you. And I'd be like, yeah, that's my daughter. She's asleep. Because sometimes it might be drinks in the hotel that you were staying in the bar or whatever, and like networking things. And I just did. Some people were really freaked out. They didn't even hide it. They were just like, oh my God, you're having a drink and there's a baby. Like, and other people were like, what you would meet is a lot of young directors, because maybe it's like a lot of independent filmmakers there.
Yeah.
Young men who'd be like, yeah, my wife's just had a baby. Yeah, it's 3 months old. And like, I'd be thinking, you've left your wife at home to look after the baby. I'm sure you're just like me. You think there was no other choice. I had to promote my film. But I'm just like, but to be fair to these men, a lot of them were going, I guess I could have brought them. And maybe I should, you know. And I was just like, why?
Yeah.
You know, my agent even said, like, it didn't occur to me that you could just do all this stuff with a baby, you know.
I mean, as you said, like, qualifying slightly, my son, my daughter, I could do that with her. My son, not in a million years. Like, he just is... very high maintenance, wants to be the centre, you know, just quite very emotional and kind of, you know, so
it, that's
not even
thing.
Now and I he's three.
I didn't know I'd been born when we had Della, because she's just like a stupidly good child, you know. Not, I mean, I wouldn't say she's naughty now, but she's much harder to deal with now. Like, I wouldn't be able to take her to a meeting now.
No.
I might if I took a laptop and made her the snowman or something like that. But, and that would probably be fine, but I wouldn't probably do that now.
Because you can, you wouldn't risk
it. So it's like, how can you judge what the personality of the child is going to be?
Yeah, you can't, you don't know.
That's impossible to tell. But it did just, you know, it just sort of made you think you can start to see things in a slightly... I mean, if there were creches, which is what Raising Films are trying to do, is like have a creche bus, which would be on set, that everyone can bring their children to. And then it's like, well, it's not a problem... the child's behaviour, because they're in an environment where they've got a trained, you know, nursery nurse looking after them and stuff. And so it's just changing people's perceptions about all of these things.
Yeah.
And it's good for everyone. It's not just about women in the industry. It's about men who don't get to see their kids because they're working on a film crew and, you know, been away from their families for weeks and weeks. Like, which isn't ideal, you know.
What would, I'm going to ask me the last question. What would, if you would give someone who is pregnant advice, what would you say?
What's their job? What are they, firefighter? Like what?
Really good, really good question. They own a pet shop. No, like just generally
general
speaking.
General pregnancy advice. No, I'm an expert.
Not pregnant advice, but what would you wish you'd known, or what would you tell yourself, you know, like?
I would say do it your way. And actually that's advice that my mum gave me. As funny as my mum can be in the sometimes hilariously rude things that she says to me, I mean as in like, you know, judgmental or whatever, I remember like those first few days when I had like social health workers and blah blah blah, all of that, midwives, and I was really going, I thought I was doing brilliantly, and then this person's come round the house and they've told me I'm doing all of it wrong.
Yeah.
And that was what, and they'd be going, and how do you feel within yourself?
Health visitors. Oh my god.
How do you feel within yourself? And I'm like, great until you turned up.
Yeah.
Now I feel depressed.
Yeah.
Because you've just told me that.
Oh, is he not doing that yet? Is he not?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, scribble.
Yeah, I had this one that was like, I was like, oh, you know, sometimes Della has a little cry and I get her to sleep just by doing the washing up and rocking about. And they were like, she should not be crying for this long. I was like, she's crying for this long because you're here. Like, why she's not falling asleep. Anyway,
I mean,
you're just
so
like,
unhelpful, isn't it?
But I spoke to my mum and my mum just went, oh, ignore them. Do it your own way. That's what we did in the 70s. We have no idea what we're doing. As long as the baby's alive, it's fine. And I was just like, there's too much hysteria about childcare. And I thought this when I was making the film. So when I was making the film, an idiot about children, as I thought, kind of the thing that I was thinking is like, there's too much hysteria about this, about pregnancy, about having, you know, it's like you need a degree in pregnancy to have a child. Yeah. And you're like, we can't control it. Why are we trying to control this thing that you can't control, like childbirth? You can't control what's going to happen. And it was already driving me insane, all of that stuff. And then when the baby came along, it was like, oh yeah, I was right. People are going to be a nightmare. They're going to be a nightmare. They're going to tell you what you can and can't do. They're going to try and educate you about your own child who's got a personality. Nothing's going to be the same for any one child. So anything, advice that someone gives you may not work, so you don't have to feel bad that it didn't work for you or that you didn't want to do it that way. Because I was like, I realized that I had done co-sleeping, that I had done on-demand feeding, I basically have done attachment parenting, but I didn't know that because I haven't read any books whatsoever. I read no books. I just did what felt not normal and nice right, and that was right for me because I'm freelance. I think a lot of this Gina Ford stuff is for people who work 9 to 5.
Yeah,
so you're trying to make the baby suit your lifestyle,
which
is a 9 to 5 lifestyle. Fine, if that's what you have to do to be able to get up to work, do it, you know. But if it's not, then just do what you want. It's just like, there's no wrong or right way.
As long as
the baby's alive, that's what I know. That's just like, that's what I think. And I just think there's so many people, like when people talk about like, oh, guilt, don't you have guilt? And I'm like, I don't actually. I don't. Have I ever had guilt about being a parent? I think I might have had guilt like when Della fell over and like hurt her lip. And I was just like, oh my God, I feel terrible. Like, why wasn't I watching her like that? Do you know what I mean?
Then.
But do I sort of keep awake at night going, oh, I should not have given her that bottle when she was 6 weeks old. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, no, of course not. Like, if they're alive and they're happy, like, it's fine. They're going to hate you anyway.
That was the brilliant Alice Lowe. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to me. It was a pleasure and a joy, obviously. She was mentioning the funding that she got to write her film, which she accessed through Raising Films. And I thought I'd give you the website just in case there's anyone out there who is in a similar position. The website is www.raisingfilms.com. I'm sure you can find it from there, but I'm just going to give you the whole thing. So it's www.raisingfilms.com/family-support-fund. And I don't know who is going to be my guest in a few weeks. I have recorded a couple in advance and I will decide which one will drop then. When you listen to this, I will be in Disney World, Florida. Not by choice. Not at all by choice, and not even really for my kids. We're going on the pretext of it being fun for the kids. We're actually going for my 41-year-old husband, who is obsessed with Disney and has mapped out every single last second of our trip. Nightmare? It very well could be. But tune in next time to find out whether I'm still married. I might even record something while I'm there, just to basically stay sane. Anyway, ciao for now. I will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.